Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Good evening, everyone. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and you're listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish.
And I'm Ina OJ, and this is Radio RF.
Is Radio RF. Well, we'll try to get it better next time.
We should practice that more often.
Yeah. So, what have you been up to lately?
I did have a story I wanted to share. I mean, a little bit tooting my own horn, but I'm going to, you know, kind of say I'm doing this as a way to raise awareness on certain topics to make myself not sound as egotistical as I am. But I was at White Castle the other day, and I was just jam-packed. Like, there was, like, a line of four or five people just waiting to make an order. With, like, a good three or four people just sitting around waiting for the order with a drive-thru of about, like, five people, right? So, you know, they were just busy. And so this lady, she gets out, she orders, and she's, like, sitting in the drive-thru lane. And she ends up, like, she's, like, getting upset that it's taking so long. Leaves her car in park in the drive-thru lane and gets out, goes into the store, starts yelling at the employees, saying, I think it'd be quicker if I came in here, and just yelling at them for being slow and stupid and this and that. And, like, it was just the most unnecessary thing I've ever seen. Like, she was just, like, wrong. It's 100% wrong. And I don't know, something just kind of possessed me, and I kind of just stood up and just was like, ma'am, excuse me, ma'am. Eventually, she turned around, and I just told her, you know, she was rude, inappropriate, and her behavior wasn't acceptable. And then she tried to justify and say, oh, blah, 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 I'm in a rush. And I was like, well, then you shouldn't have come here. It's easily told that, because talking about it was jam-packed. You could tell it was busy. You know, the world is never fast. And I'm like, that's because they make the food fresh every time. Like, you order a burger at White Castle, they steam it on the spot. It's not sitting underneath a heat lamp. They make it on the spot. Which they were supposed to be fast. And then someone's like, well, then stop coming. And then, it felt good. We had a nice little adrenaline rush. And it's important to stand up to bullies and really to respect people. You know, just the amount of disrespect people have for each other is mildly astounding.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you there. Like, I think respecting other people is one of the most important things we can do. And when I see it, I hate seeing people be disrespectful. So now I always try to call it out, too, if I ever do see it.
You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I understand that sometimes you just kind of have to be a jerk because you get bad service. Or people sometimes really are just being incompetent. You know, it happens sometimes. And, well, you should be respectful while you be, you know, a little forceful about it. I mean, the thing about this scenario is that she was just 100% in the wrong. Like, it wasn't like they messed up. They didn't do anything wrong. They weren't slow. You know, everyone else was waiting patiently, being polite. You know, I don't know. People.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Well, today I did the first full day of the internship. And this week I don't, like I'd mentioned, some of them involve some camps. I don't have that this week. This week I was just, it's this whole month. Well, it's about to be over anyway. So, yeah, the rest of June. I'm just helping out around the school and preparing computers for classes that are going on next semester. So yesterday and the day before and today, I was basically just making sure that the computers mostly work, you know, power supply, fans, the power lights, you know, on the case supposed to work, didn't always work. And then I would install a copy of Windows on it. And so I did all that, and then today I got to work on some nice computers that they'll be using for the security classes where they plant evidence on there and, you know, have to, you know, the students will have to find them and all that. But what's nice about these computers, they had solid-state hard drives on them, and I was impressed with how fast those things loaded up. Like, I'm talking 15 seconds. Yeah. Like, it says, you know, it had the little Windows logo come up whenever it begins to load, and then all of a sudden you're just at the login page, and it's like, wow.
Well, to be fair, I think every computer I've ever owned has started up that fast the first time I use it. And then I download something, watch a little bit of porn, whatever, and next thing you know, the computer's working really, really slow. Let's be real.
Now, this was like noticeably quick. Like, At first, I was trying to get the CD drive to open so I could put the Windows 7 CD in there fast enough for the boot menu, so I could press the boot menu button. And, you know, I was trying to get it. It wasn't working because the way the case was, I had to open the thing up a little bit. But all of a sudden, I look up and I'm at the login screen.
Are you still there?
Crap.
Okay,
yeah,
I think he's not there anymore. So I'm going to start talking now. So as you all know, I've been busy with that gardening. It says she's still on, so I don't know if you're not hearing me.
I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
Try.
Hey, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah. Sorry, dude. I'm having a lot of technical issues this week. My phone stopped working, and Sarah's phone only works if you hold it a certain way and open it a certain way. So it's a nightmare. I don't really know. Did you ask me a question? I feel like you asked me a question.
No, you asked me if I was there.
Okay, so you heard me. You heard me talking. I can hear. I don't know what's happening. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I think it was on your. That's okay. But you know that pretty much.
Like I said,
I'm
having technical issues.
Solid state drives are really fast, and I want one now, so I might get one.
How much do they cost?
Oh gosh, you know I don't know actually. I have to look that up. I know they're obviously more expensive than hard disk drives. I'll look that up.
Oh, quick off-question topic. Did we post a link anywhere?
I posted it in chat. There's only two people in chat there.
Yeah. Can someone tell us why no one listens to our Thursday episode? We can get like 50 hits on like a Monday episode and then like 5 on a Thursday episode. And like the thing I don't understand about it is that most of our listeners are archived. I mean, we get like anywhere from like 12 to 5 listens usually live, and then we'll get like anywhere between like 20 to 50 like archive listens per episode. Except for Thursdays. Thursdays you get like just 10 people all together. I don't get it. What's wrong with Thursdays? And
it's the other way around.
Why are you watching the archive?
Yeah, it's the other way around, actually. It was Mondays, I think, wasn't it?
No, Mondays are the good ones. That's when we get the big hits,
okay.
And then Thursdays.
Yeah.
I think it might be the lack of guests on Thursdays. I think people like episodes with guests. Is that it? You can call in at
646-200-4633. 4733.
Yeah,
there
we go.
Yeah. I didn't even have to look
that
it up.
That was just all out of memory,
time.
Though, so.
Yeah. So
I guess I can update
drives,
a little bit. What was that?
I was going to say solid-state drives are pretty expensive. Here's a Samsung solid-state drive, 256 gigabytes for $145. That's pretty high for only 250 gigabytes.
I'd actually have to take a quick moment to kind of apologize. I know our last couple episodes have been kind of sloppy. We missed a week, and then, quite honestly, I don't think anyone was prepared for Monday's episode, and I'm going to be honest, we're not prepared for today's episode. You know, my wife's 9 months pregnant now, so, you know, there's a lot of doctor's appointments, and she needs a lot of help, so I'm kind of busy with that, and I have, like, rearranging my work schedule again, so I'm busy with that, and then I have, you know, 3 different gardens now that I'm dealing with, and I'm still working on projects to increase my gardening space, so I've been preoccupied. And, Red Fish Show, as opposed to Mr. Fish Show. They're two different people, actually. Has clearly been busy. You know, he just completed his class. Now he's starting an internship. So, you know, it's been a very hectic late spring for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that happens. Like today, I was saying, you know, I was making some dinner, and my phone alarm went off for the trash because I remind myself it's trash day with a phone alarm. And, you know, I was going, you know, taking out the trash and all that stuff, and I was in the kitchen, and I was like, you know, something always coincides with trash day. What am I missing here? And I was like, holy crap, like the radio shows today. And this was, you know, 30 minutes ago. And so I was like, oh, wow, it's completely slipped my mind today. So, you know, it happens.
Now, I mentioned my gardening project. Planted more stuff. Again, so we have I think I might have mentioned this last time I talked, but last time I was there, we actually pulled like 15 kale plants out of a compost pile and planted them into. We broke the bed, the plot into like about 9 beds, I believe. We planted like an entire bed of kale. We have 2 more beds left to plant now. I'm not quite sure we're planting because I have some people I'm working on the project with who planted a bunch of stuff yesterday. I'll be there going there tomorrow to plant some more, throw down some mulch and manure and stuff like that, water the plants. But I was actually talking to the person who owns like the farm and community garden, and this actually is a great time to tonight's episode. We're going to be doing a class on harvesting acorns and processing them and making roasted acorns and acorn flour. And acorns, and so tonight's episode is about foraging. I'm by no means an expert. I'm like an amateur, to be honest. But it's something that I find very interesting, and it kind of coincides with my permaculture ideas and gardening ideas. So it's a very interesting topic. Now, what's cool about acorns is if anyone's ever seen, you know, an oak tree, you know they produce tons of acorns. And that's a free and wildly abundant food. The major issue with acorns is it does require a lot of processing. Now, certain acorns require less processing than others because I believe it's black acorns or black oak. They don't have any tannin in them. And this is interesting. Most acorns have a decent amount of tannin in them. And that's like a type of acid. But what's cool about tannin is it's actually used in the tanning process to make, like, tanned hides. But you can leach it out of the acorns by soaking them in boiling water and repetitively until it starts changing the water's color. But acorns are kind of annoying because first you got to harvest them, then you got to split the good ones from the bad ones. And the best way to do that is to put just all of your acorns into, like, a tub of water. And the ones that float, you throw out because they have either holes or bacteria or bugs inside of them. The ones that sink, those are good. And then after you do that, you have to break them out of their shells, and then you have to winnow, you know, all the shells and the stuff off of the actual nut meat. And then once you do that, you got to soak the tannin out. And then once you do that, you either dry them out or roast them. And then you can either eat them as roasted nuts, or what I'm going to do is when I do this, and this is going to be in September when they drop, is make flour out of them. Now, from what I understand is they make a flour that's a non-binding flour, but it makes a great thickening agent. You can make breads and a lot of different stuff just out of the flour. And it's a great way. You can just save money. You can mix it with flour. Now, I can't eat regular flour, or my doctor recommends that I no longer eat regular flour, so I actually been using garbanzo bean flour. Well, that's a whole different ballpark.
Now, that sounds interesting. I'd like to look into that.
But yeah, there's a lot of work.
I've been trying to avoid the wheat. I had read about acorns before. As far as in an actual foraging, like, survival situation, I've heard, like, the tannins can actually, you know, I mean, too much tannins is the right way to say it. Can be bad for your liver, I believe. But I'm not sure. I think in a survival situation without processing them, it's not a very good idea to eat those. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, you could probably survive eating them. And again, certain oak trees just have less tannin than others. So I believe the ones that grow on the West Coast, you can basically kind of skip the leaching process. Because I believe it's the black oak. And I'll double check that in a little bit. Most of you in a computer, you can double check that. But one type of oak basically has no tannin. The biggest issue with tannin is it's simply an irritant. It'll taste horrible. It'll bother your mouth and it'll bother your throat. But again, it's just a simple soaking. It's just a matter of processing it.
Yeah, I had read about the varying tannin content, but I don't remember which ones exactly either. I'll see if I can find it.
Now, while he's looking for that, I wanted to talk into a particular tree that I think anyone can identify, and that's the pine tree. And the pine tree has a lot of different uses. And I'm just going to list on them. First off, the pine needles, any pine needles, can be just turned into a tea that's high in vitamin C and other vitamins and has, you know, some medicinal benefits. And it makes quite a tasty tea that, no, it does not taste like what you think. It does not taste like that Christmas tree smell. So that's always good. Another thing you can do with pine trees is actually the inner bark is edible, and you can kind of make it into a jerky. But that's not something you want to do in most situations because you have to basically harm the tree to get to the inner bark. And if you were to do it, it had to be an emergency survival situation. Or, you know, you could prepare for it by finding an acorn tree, you know, or a pine tree that's fallen down or been hurt in some way, and then just harvesting that and then stockpiling a bunch of bark jerky. Another cool use is the young green shoots, as opposed to the darker green, which is the older ones, and you can tee that up. The young green ones can actually be used as a vegetable, and you can cook them very briefly or whatever, and then they make a nice cooked vegetable. And for medicinal effects, you can actually harvest the sap from the pine tree, and you mix that with some type of alcohol, and you make a tincture, and that is actually a cough suppressant. So that's pretty cool. And then another source of food from pine trees is you can harvest the pollen in the male pine cones, and this is usually like early June when you can do this. And, you know, pollen is a high-protein, high-vitamin content food. And it's obviously highly abundant if you've seen how many acorns there are growing on the trees. I also believe that some pine trees make pine nuts, I believe, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yes. Yeah, pine nuts do just come from pine cones. I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming you have to get them while they're still green and open them up, because I've never seen pine nuts in the brown pine cones. But that's where
they
come from.
Most of the things I've read don't mention the pine nuts, so I don't know much about foraging for the pine nuts. I do know, however, that pine nuts cost a lot of money. A lot of money. They're very expensive nuts to buy.
They sure are tasty, though. Yeah, when I learned that you can eat almost any part of most pine trees, and by the way, you cannot eat you. So don't try to eat you needles. That's toxic. But yeah, my friend had told me about that, and you know, from what I've heard, like you mentioned, actually eating the inner bark, or from what I've read, rather, like it's actually like not bad. It's not one of those things that you have to make yourself eat. That it's actually pretty tasty if you cook it a little bit or something like that. But you know, I didn't hear if you, but with the needles, you can actually just kind of like chew them, and they have vitamin C, and you know, just swallow the juices and then spit out the plant material afterward.
Exactly, and the younger, tender ones you can actually eat, and you know, get the fiber content as well as you know, calories from, which is important in a survival situation. Or if you're just trying to live off the land, which is kind of cool too. Now I know there's uses for firs and spruces, and in a minute I'm gonna go open my book and get to that. So I'll probably refer back to that in a little bit. But off the top of my head, another plant that's entirely edible is the dandelion. Every aspect of that can be used in some form of a way. Now, obviously, I imagine most people know you can eat dandelion greens. So the leaves, and they taste better when you eat the young ones than versus the old ones. They're kind of tough and bitter. But, I mean, no matter what, it's always edible. It's a matter of palatability. Now, what's cool is that you can also use the root from them. And you can use that by drying that, and you can make a coffee substitute that's caffeine-free, which is pretty cool. And then the flowers themselves can be used to make teas or wines.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't known about the roots. I know that people talk about using dandelion greens in salads, and I'm pretty sure I've had a salad prepackaged that actually had those in it.
Personally, I like to use them for a cooked vegetable, or better yet, I like to use them in soups and stews. They're one of my favorite greens, actually, for soups and stews. And by the way, they're actually more nutrient-dense than kale.
Oh, wow.
So that weed you're paying to remove from your lawn is actually an edible food that is more nutritious than the kale you're buying.
That's pretty cool. I might look for some dandelions in our yard. I haven't seen any, actually, almost anywhere right now. But that sounds good.
Now,
so
another edible...
Yeah.
What was that?
Go ahead. I was about to ask what else you got.
Okay. There's another edible green, and this weed grows everywhere. You can see it even in, like, sidewalks growing out of the cracks. It's plantain. And it's that, you know, big leafy, you know, big leaf green, you know, kind of a little round arrowish shape. And it has the stem coming out with, like, the green seeds off of that. And those leaves, again, are highly nutritious, highly medicinal. And you can even use the stems from that and the seeds to make a flower, which is pretty interesting. So you would harvest the seeds from that by basically drying it out and then pushing it through with a mesh, and then you get the seasonal ones, and then you grind those up into a flower.
Sounds good. I'm trying to look at a list of some plants here that are edible. One of them, interesting to me, was it's chicory. I didn't realize, I see a picture of it, and I didn't realize that that's what chicory was. So that's pretty cool. I mean, obviously, we put some people blend that into their coffee, but I've never actually seen the leaves and realized that they're chicory. They do look very similar to dandelion greens, but I think they have no flowers.
You're often, when you buy dandelion greens in the store, it's a hybrid of dandelion chicory.
Hmm. Cool.
Off the top of my head, another fantastic plant is the cattail. And there's another, very important survival food. Cattails, as I imagine most of you know, grow in bodies of water, you know, lakes and, you know, bogs and, you know, that type of stuff. Now, the roots themselves can be used any time of the year, and they can be eaten as a tuber, like a potato, or they can be dried out and made into a flower. The young shoots can be basically used as a cooked vegetable, very similar to asparagus. And then the tops themselves can also be used to make, during certain times of the year, to make flour. And other times of the year, the tops also make a great kindling for starting fires. There's another, and the cattails are something you can eat any time of the year. They're available for food. So, dead of winter, you can pull cattails out of a lake and have food.
Yeah, now I had heard of cattail flour before. I don't know where I heard about it, but I've heard about cattail flour before.
Now, I mean, I think there's some obvious ones I'm about to go over. But within, literally, maybe if I worked an entire mile around my neighborhood, I would pack 5 berries that I can eat. You know, I have 2 types of strawberries, 3 types of strawberries, actually. I have black strawberry drink, black raspberries, red raspberries, and wine berries, which are basically an invasive Japanese raspberry. I also have a type of blueberry growing around me, blackberries, and then grapes. As well, I know I haven't harvested the grapes themselves, but I have used the grape leaves to make domo a few times.
Hmm.
But you got to be careful because the grape leaves look very similar to a poisonous vine called moon something or another. So, I mean, it's important that you always use at least 2 or 3 sources to verify what you're eating to make sure it is what it is, and you need to be careful when you're doing these kind of things. Now, I'm not going to go over mushrooms because the amount of safety protocol you need to go over identifying mushrooms is 1,000 times more dangerous than any of the foraging. And just because there's so many mushrooms and there's so many poisonous mushrooms, I highly suggest that if you are interested in mushroom foraging, you do it with an expert. I haven't done any mushroom foraging myself, so I'm hoping to find a group this year to go out with.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff. But, yeah, incredibly dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. It makes me wonder how long it took people to find out which mushrooms were safe and which weren't, and how many people had to die for us to have the knowledge we have now. You know?
There's a lot of plant, you can't eat any of it except for, like, one time of the year. You can eat, like, for, like, a month, you can eat the green shoots off of it. And I'm like, how did someone find out this deadly poisonous plant is edible once a year? Like, how do you find that out?
Right, like, you have to, God, how many people have to eat that at different times where they're like, all right, so Bob ate it in June, it's okay then, but Jerry ate it in July, and it's not good then. Yeah, you know, speaking of having multiple sources, I was thinking, you know, like, you know, when in doubt, don't eat it. I think about, I never read the book, but the movie Into the Wild, you know, dude ate something he wasn't sure about, and he died painfully. So, you know, don't eat something you're not sure about. It's worse for your survival situation to be, even if it doesn't kill you, to be throwing up and having some other stuff going on than it is to not eat anything.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a skill you want to practice, because if you were in an emergency, like, all right, like I have 2 field guides. But usually for my next fair vacation, I use the internet. You know, if we were in a truly an emergency situation, I wouldn't have the internet to verify with. So I'm trying to learn as much as I can beforehand, so I'm actually like comfortable harvesting a lot of things. Now I got my book open and I found spruces, and spruces can be used in three ways. They can be used to make a candy, a flower, and a cooked vegetable. And in emergency situations, you can use the tender green shoots, and you can boil them, and you can also use the inner bark as you would with the pine, and then you can use the pitch to make kind of like a chewing gum, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
And again, that's going to be a nutritious versus what, you know, you eat now, which is just sugar.
I was trying to look up a few things that you can make or that you can eat. I ran into an interesting article of things you can make flour out of, and there's a lot. Let's see. Well, just a couple they mentioned. Under the outstanding category, you can make flour out of amaranth. I think that's how you pronounce that. Amaranth. Amaranth.
Amaranth, yes. It's actually an ancient grain.
Yeah. There's standing flour, apparently. And also is quinoa flour, which makes perfect sense. Quinoa is great. And then under the good category, we have acorn flour, and it's got pictures of acorn waffles, and that just looks pretty good. I would love to try that. And chia flour, barnyard grass made into flour.
You can make a flour out of the balsam fir. You would use the inner bark, and you would dry that out and then grind it into like a meal or a flour. And that would be something, again, you most likely would prefer to mix that with something. And also, the eastern hemlock can be used to make flour, as well as tamarack. And these are all various evergreen trees, you know, similar to pine trees.
Now, this also mentions, besides cattails, like I said, you can make cattail flour. Surprisingly, you can make flour out of mesquite pods and peanuts. I never really thought of peanut flour, but that's pretty obvious. That's pretty cool. Sago palm. So,
now, do peanuts grow wildly by you? My area, it's kind of hard to grow peanuts.
Yeah, I've never seen wild peanuts before.
You can also use black walnuts, which grow, profusely in my area, you know, to make, again, another type of flour. Or you can just eat the nuts.
Yeah.
But again, they're kind of a hassle to process.
Sweet gum balls. Do you guys have those around your area?
Sweet gum balls? I'm not familiar with them, so I wouldn't know.
Well, it's called a sweet gum tree. The balls are those little spiky things. They're green when they fall, and then they turn brown. I think this may be a more southern thing. I was just looking to see if you could eat those. I think you can. But let's see. Well, actually, it has a sap that you can chew. Yeah, that's probably why it's called sweet gum then. Yeah, you might recognize it if you looked it up. We have them all over the place down here in the South, and we have quite a few in our yard, too.
Now, since we're talking about flour, I just wanted to bring up that there are at least two, if not several more, types of moss you can actually dry and use as a flour. Now, the two my guide recommends is reindeer moss and Iceland moss, and I suggest you Google these so you can see what they look like. But both can be basically picked off of rocks dried. You're going to want to soak them because moss tends to have acids that are good at dissolving rocks that can be a little irritating if you don't leach them out real quick. But you can soak that out and then dry them, and then you have a fantastic survival food. And another fantastic survival food is basically it's like in the rock tripe, which is this kind of like big, flat-looking, grayish-greenish thing that grows on rocks. It's like kind of like almost as a sheet of paper almost, and that can be cooked or put into stews. And that, you know, again, it's something you can harvest summer, spring, winter, or fall. But there's always rock tripe on rocks.
Yeah, the lichen, whenever you mentioned moss, was what I was going to mention. I also saw that in this article. However, that is listed under the famine category, so you probably don't want to eat it, but you can.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good thing to know, though.
Yeah, it is a good thing to know. And I think I could probably recognize lichen. It's pretty unique looking as far as fungi go.
Yeah, it is true. Now, since we're talking about things that are useful in survival situations, I just wanted to quickly talk about an easy-to-do water purification method. So, you know, you don't want to kind of pick water from a lake and drink it or cook from it. But you might find yourself in a situation where you have to. Now, the best thing you can do in that situation is hopefully you're somewhat prepared. And I've actually tried these techniques before, and they do indeed work. What I did was I had two containers. So I'd pick a container, one container. I'd fill it up with the water, and I preferred using stream water because it's running and it's always going to be cleaner. And then I put that on a rock. And then I put another container, you know, on the ground, and I put, you know, into one container, I put, like, you know, a rolled-up shirt or towel or a piece of cloth, and I kind of rolled it up into, like, a tight wad, and then put it from one container to the other. So the water, then it's gravity-fed through the cloth into the container. And this will filter out a lot of the larger particles and stuff that you want to get out of there, the organic matter. And then after that, you obviously boil it to kill out the pathogens and stuff. Now, obviously, this is going to purify out chemicals or some of the other issues, but between getting out the large organic matter and the pathogens, you have drinkable water. Personally, when I did do it, I preferred to make it into tea. You still had some of a little kind of, you know, wood taste to it. Mm-hmm.
No.
Now, are you doing the sumac tree? Not poison sumac, but like regular sumac?
I don't know what it looks like, but I am aware that it's different than poison sumac.
Okay, well, it's a sumac tree, and then during the summer and, like, late spring, there's, like, these red berry flowers that grow on the top of the tree. Now, you can cut those off, kind of crush them a little bit, and then soak them in cold water, and you make a vitamin-rich, particularly in vitamin C and a few other vitamins, that tastes very similar to pink lemonade. So you soak them for, like, 15 minutes, then shade it out to get the larger hairs out, and then, you know, sweeten it. I had it actually unsweetened, and I thought it tasted pretty good.
Hmm, cool. Yeah, I was going to mention, whenever you mentioned, you know, you like to make the water into tea since, you know, it helps it taste better and all that. So, but besides, whatchamacallit, pine needles, are there any other things in the wild that could make a good tea?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, another example is you, and you have medicinal benefits as well as providing medicine. I'm going to pull up to my book right quick, and I'm going to pull up the tea section, and I'll just kind of list a few things.
So you can make tea out of you, then?
Yes.
Okay.
Or you can dry it, powder it, and keep it medicinally.
Yeah, I thought it was toxic to eat, but maybe it's the actual, like, I don't know. I'll have to read more about
not
that.
Not you, the tree. It's, I'm sorry, I meant yarrow. My bad. I was talking about yarrow, which is a flower. Yeah, it's a green flower. Yeah. I'm really sorry about that. Yeah, I meant yarrow.
Yeah, so don't make a tea out of you. Make one out of yarrow.
All right, I'm almost there. I'm almost there. Fruit, blah, 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 blah. Teas, okay. So now the tea section. Now, let's see. You can make a tea out of comfrey, which grows wild, alfalfa, coltsfoot. there's this thing called New Jersey tea plant. You can make a tea out of strawberries. I believe that's the leaf or the root. Brambles, yarrow, as I said, catnip, clovers.
I think I have
a whole other bunch of things. You could use wood nettles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've known about nettles in Tibetan Buddhism. The famous yogi Milarepa was said to have a diet of only nettles, and so in all the paintings of him, his skin is always green from having only nettles, nettle tea as his sustenance.
Now, I believe you can also eat nettle if you cook it. And then once you cook it, all the spikes and whatever, they go away. And again, it's always better to use young tender greens for these kind of things than it is the older stuff for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you can eat that. I'm pretty sure I've read about that before. And you can make it into a soup, too, I think, not just tea.
Yeah, now, everything we're going over is central to Eastern and Central North America. So if you live on the West Coast or in another continent, some of what we're talking about might apply to you. I mean, basically, like, pine trees kind of grow everywhere, and, dandelion grows kind of everywhere, and berries kind of grow everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, what I find interesting is there's a large amount of stuff that can basically be used as an asparagus substitute, and I'm trying to get to that stage real quick. Okay, I got the list of asparaguses. So there's wild asparagus. You can use part of pokeweed, solomon seal, daylilies, fireweed, common milkweed, cairn flowers, cattails, large cane, brackish, ostrich ferns. And when you do ferns, you can eat, usually the fiddleheads of almost all ferns are edible, but only when they're the young, uncurled fronds, which is usually early.
Now, that that reminds me that for some reason ferns made me think of aloe, and you can actually eat aloe.
I actually know the process for that.
What you're going to do for processing aloe is you're going to take a knife and you're going to basically cut off the green layer, and then you're going to peel that off. And then what you want to do is you want to take the fleshy part, and you want to do this in a body of water, because then you want to wash off the sticky stuff on the outside, and you kind of have this clear greenish stuff on the inside that's a little bit fleshy, and you can eat that part. Usually I would just add that to a smoothie or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had just been reading that the yellow layer, the skin and the yellow layer under it, called latex, are considered unsafe to eat. So, yeah, as long as you're having the clear meat on the inside or the gel. I have actually, that reminds me, I have had an aloe vera drink. I'd gotten it in an Indian grocery store in a city nearby. And, besides being kind of oversweet, it was actually kind of good. It had a little bits of aloe in it and that sort of thing.
I was actually going to mention that all the ones I bought have been just loaded with crazy amounts of sugar.
Yeah. Though, again, of course, I don't have anything to back this up. I've read that, the sugars naturally occurring in things like that, they're not so bad for you. Your body can regulate things if you have...
Oh, of course.
If you don't
the stuff in the stores, it's not the natural sugars. It's added sugar, and usually,
refined.
The high fructose corn syrup and stuff like that. So, it's a little disappointing. You try to buy these things, and say, look, it's healthy. But then it's just loaded with, chemicals and sugars that you don't want to be ingesting. Or maybe you do. I'm not trying to judge.
Yeah, to each their own. If you want to enjoy that, to risk diabetes, that's entirely up to you. Truly. Now, some
I don't really know if
you
have a lot of people listening.
Yeah, I don't either.
But
I was going to say,
if you have any knowledge on this topic, you can call in at 646-247-33, and you can tell us what you know on tonight's topic. Now, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, slightly off topic, and I don't remember if we were talking about this on the phone or on the show, but we were talking about how I was thinking... and I found the word for this, too, that humans are mainly fruitarians. The real word for it is frugivorous. I think it's a hard G. Frugivorous, I guess, is how you'd say it. But you had argued that you don't think so because we have canines. However,
that's not the major reason why I don't think that. I mean, canines they're clearly designed for eating meat. But the issue is with the fruitarian diet is it doesn't meet our nutrition needs. You cannot live off a diet of just fruit. You cannot. Simply put, you
will die. I'm not saying only either, but as a mainly fruit thing. But to address the canine thing, I happened to be reading about gibbons today because, I just read about apes every once in a while for the fun of it. And they also have canines, and they live, you know, they have an entirely frugivorous diet. And so, just saying, no correlation between meat eating and canines there.
Wait, which species are that?
Gibbons, the lesser apes.
Okay.
Only lesser apes.
Well, I'm not
yeah,
thinking it also
Gibbons.
Probably serves a purpose of also defense and biting and stuff.
Yeah, it could.
But yeah, I mean, a diet of just fruit is, it'll kill you. You will go to the hospital. I guarantee you 100%
yeah.
not live off of fruit. Maybe a diet of just fruits and nuts. But even then, vegetables
yeah.
are pretty important. And legumes are pretty important as well. So, I mean,
yeah, mainly I emphasize
yeah.
just it being the staple, basically. Like here, the Gibbons diet is about 60% fruit. And then they also have figs, but I think that's a fruit, but also twigs, leaves, insects, and flowers, and occasionally bird eggs. Yeah, mainly I'm thinking fruit, nuts, and also vegetables would be the optimum diet.
Now, my understanding was actually you could basically live off of just vegetables. And you could live off of just vegetables if you got
yeah.
the right combination. I believe between potatoes and there's potatoes and something else. We had just potatoes and I forgot which green. There's another big green. Between the two of them, you could just live off of literally a diet and you have all your nutritional needs. The
oh,
issue
wow.
with eating fruit is there's not enough calories and there's not enough phytonutrients and there's no protein. So, I mean, to say that we're meant to eat
yeah.
fruits is it's really not true.
Well, like I said,
if anything,
I mean,
we need more nuts.
Not 100% fruit, but a majority fruit diet.
And fruits are actually wildly abundant in almost any areas. A lot of
mm-hmm.
wild, basically everywhere. And each location is going to have their own wild fruits.
Let's see. I wonder.
Now,
I mean, never
most people know that the birch tree is edible, and the original flavor for birch beer or birch soda is actually from the birch tree. And you can also basically you can make like a syrup from it, you can make a tea from it, and you can make a flower from it. And that's all pretty interesting. Yes, and then you have the white paper birch. So usually the bark is so easily recognizable. And I'm just going to read the use part of this book right now. It says syrup, sugar, water, flour, and tea, and those are the usage. The birch sap flows abundantly and can be processed just like maple syrup to make sweets, molasses syrup, and the flow is usually best between late March and April. The inner bark can be dried to make flour, and emergency use, and the twigs can be steeped in hot water to make tea. I've actually done the thing, and it makes a very tasty tea. And obviously, you can also use it to make birch beer and birch soda.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah, I think I had heard of birch beer before. That's actually a soda, though, isn't it? Like, you know, ginger beer being a soda, not a beer.
Yeah.
Or
I actually
birch
heard
beer is not
now an actual ginger beer that's an actual beer.
I think, yeah, I had heard of that. I'd like to try that because the soda, at least, ginger beer, so good. Like, it's difficult to drink, you know? It's so good.
Well, I actually,
I love
from
that.
A farmer's market, they sell a very interesting, this is a ginger soda, actually. And it's just ginger, like, sugar syrup. And that's about it. It's literally, okay, carbonated water, pure cane sugar, fresh ginger, and citric acid, and it's a ginger ale.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Yeah, that's my dad used to talk about that. Like, that's the way ginger ale used to be all the time. Like, I wish I remembered some of them. I think there's Buffalo ginger ale. I think that's the one he used to talk about. And that one had, like, pieces of ginger floating in the bottom of it and stuff like that. That's some good stuff.
Yep, that's how mine are.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, if you buy, like, the process of it, it's literally chemically flavored. And, like, people buy it because it makes your stomach feel better. But it's, like, it doesn't contain real ginger. So I don't know how that's happening.
Yeah, I know Canada Dry does have real ginger in it now. A few of them do, I think, but it's I think it's just ginger flavor. But I don't know.
Well, that,
and it's probably slightly placebo effects too, but, you know, bubbles do help the stomach anyway, so it might not be much better than any other thing, but combined with the placebo effect of believing that it's helping.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, what, 40% of the population is susceptible to placebo effect? Or I think it's, like, almost, it's
yeah.
like almost 50, and then it's, like, almost 40, even, like, if you're told, like, hey, this is a sugar pill, but we're pretending that it exists, and there's still a 40% chance that it'll affect you, which is crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, like, I get the idea of people kind of just tend to dismiss placebo. It's like, oh, it's just placebo, but, like, I think that's pretty awesome. You know, placebo is pretty amazing that our minds have that ability to do things like that just by believing that they're going to happen. You know, that's a nice little window into what the mind's capable of, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, I think when people talk about the effects of prayer or magic, I mean, I think it's almost an exploration of the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm. It's like will working, basically, you know? And, well, yeah. And I guess we're slightly off topic, but, yeah, like, that's how the sigils work in chaos magic, I guess, you know. It's supposed to basically work a placebo type effect, getting past your critical conscious mind into the unconscious so that it can work there. So, you know, it's kind of like hypnotism in a way, too, I guess.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, to get back on topic, are you familiar with Queen Anne's lace flower?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, it's a very distinct white flower. It's very... a large kind of cluster type of flower, and it grows, you know, maybe knee-high to, like, waist-high. And, again, you're really going to want to look this up, you know, and really get comfortable identifying it, but, I mean, I can literally, like, spot it from, like, a quarter of a mile away while driving a car on, like, Queen Anne's lace. And the reason I bring Queen Anne's lace up is because it's actually wild carrot. And you can pull it up, and as long as it's the plant from this year. And the way you tell whether or not it's this year's Queen Anne's lace or last year's Queen Anne's lace is this year's, the flower clusters are flat, whereas last year's, they actually kind of cup upward and kind of funnel up. And you don't want those ones because the roots are no longer palatable, but the ones from this year, the ones that are flat, you can pull those up and then, you know, if you want to double boil them, but you can eat them with the carrot or parsnips. And there's also a lot of parsnips that looks very similar. And I'm not going to get too much into that. I will say that Queen Anne's lace grows in dry fields and thickets and stuff like that, and for that reason, it's the safest one to harvest because there's three or four things that look similar to it, but they all grow in, like, bogs or, you know, on the sides of lakes or in boggy marsh areas. And there's also, like, wild parsnips and something else, and you know, they grow in the same area, but, you know, with the issue of identifying that area, I would recommend just sticking to Queen Anne's lace.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the things that makes me avoid the most is being afraid I'm not going to identify things right. So, I mean, you know, I've only kind of half-heartedly looked into edibles, wild edibles. Yeah, I need to, like, really study it so I'll be able to recognize
it. Yeah, the thing with that is that the identification guides, the issue is when you're out in the field trying to identify something, it's going to look different depending on which time of the year it is. So, like, maybe the way to identify it is based off of the flowers. And once you learn to recognize the flowers, you learn to recognize the leaves. But until that point, you know, you might see, oh, this looks like so-and-so, but without being able to see it in all four seasons, you can't always be sure. So, I mean, it's one of those things where you almost want to get out, identify things, go out the next season, and keep looking at it and kind of see what it looks like in each season so you start to really learn what it is. I'd highly recommend if you're interested in these topics, just spending time identifying plants each season. And then the next season, you can start harvesting. Now, there's a lot of stuff that I've mentioned that are really easy and simple and safe that you can't mess up. You know, and those are most of the ones that I've mentioned, not all of them. Like I said, you know, some of them, you know, like yarrow and Queen Anne's lace, there's a couple of mimics you need to watch out for, like water hemlock, which is a highly poisonous plant. Looks very similar to both yarrow and Queen Anne's lace. But again, the major way to identify that is if you're in a dry field, it's not going to be water hemlock.
Yeah, that's true. Now, was water hemlock the hemlock poison that, you know, is poison, like Socrates drank?
Yes. I believe so. Well, there's different types of hemlock.
Right. That's why I was wondering if that was it. Because I know he drank hemlock poison.
I'm not sure. No, I'd also recommend, and I haven't personally done this myself, but you check with experts for a lot of what you're trying to do, too. There's just another level of extra security, you know, for your own safety. But again, I mean, if you're using the, I mean, what most guys recommend is use three different sources. So I generally have two field guides, one for medicinal plants and one for edible plants. And there's a huge amount of crossover, so usually one book is one and the other book is second, and then I'll use the internet for my third. Barring that, I'll use two different internet websites to identify something, and then the book. And again, once you start getting the hang of a lot of things, it's not quite as necessary to be as crazy about it. But when identifying new things you're not comfortable with identifying, and you should always try to guarantee by always checking sources, even if you are an expert, because there's a lot of plants just like other plants.
Yeah, you had mentioned, you just said the hemlock, you know, not all hemlock's poisonous. And it's just random fact of the day, because I'm full of those. You know, tomatoes, eggplants are related to tobacco. They're all part of the nightshade family. And, you know, they're
nightshade is known for being a... You know what's surprising is how quickly tonight's episode has gone. We're, at, like... 10 minutes left? Yammered on and on and on, and it wasn't really organized. And again, I apologize for that. And we'll probably revisit these topics because I think it's important, and for safety reasons, that it should just kind of be hammered in some of this information. And, maybe next time we do it, we'll actually have a list of plants we're going to talk about. I'm going to provide a photo slideshow, which would have been good, but, I mean, this is literally thrown together last minute. I've had technical issues. He's been busy. I've been busy. So this is literally mostly off the top of my head and quickly slipping through my field guide.
Yeah, well, it shows how much you know, or at least how familiar you are with your source, too. Like, you sound pretty knowledgeable.
Thank you. I mean, I've been trying to study this for the last 2 years, so... I mean, side by side with the gardening and permaculture stuff, I mean, this whole thing, I just see them as inherently connected, you know? If I'm going to be living in the homestead in a few years, as I hope I am, I mean, I quite honestly imagine me spending time harvesting, you know, pine pollen or, you know, acorns or walnuts. And it's crazy because I know people who literally pay, like, lots of money to get acorns taken off and walnuts taken off their property, and then, like, walnuts, you know how much, walnuts are very expensive to buy in the store, yet you really rake them off your lawn and throw them out and pay to remove them.
That's really silly, too, like, we just think of it as junk.
In a way where it makes it I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just saying, yeah, it's really silly, like, we just treat it as junk in the yard or whatever, and it's like, oh, that's not suitable to eat, you know, that's not the right kind to eat, that's the regular kind that you want.
I think part of the issue is some of the things I've mentioned, particularly like the nuts, there's just a lot of processing work, a lot, you know, and our current society just does not give us the time, energy, or space to do it.
Which
is a little
not actually practical.
We easily meet our sustainable needs just by eating locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want to work on mainly, just as a little step in supporting the local economy of farms and local environment. And I think that you or my other friend might have been the one to post that on Facebook, an article that somebody important and in the know basically said that small-scale horticulture is basically the only way to feed the whole world, or, you know, basically the best way.
I shared that article. That was based on a scientific study that said that basically, our current system of agriculture is simply not sustainable, and local small farms, and quite honestly, I'm not even sure small farms is the answer. I think it's backyard gardens plus small farms plus foraging is truthfully the only way we're going to sustainably feed people in the future.
Yeah, it makes the most sense. And like you said, with certain things, it's nice to trade from other areas. Like, I love avocados, you know, I want to get those from California. But, you know, like, I feel like for the most part, it's good to eat what's in your local area.
And in regards to, like, your needs, like, okay, so, like, I love orange juice. Oh, man, I love oranges. Like, I love oranges. But if you're looking for a vitamin C fruit, there are, like, berries that grow up in the northern area called the sea berry that is actually more nutrient-dense in vitamin C than orange.
Cool.
And, by the way, that plant is also a nitrogen fixer, which means that it actually pulls nitrogen out of the atmosphere and puts it into the soil. So you plant that around other crops, you're actually fertilizing your crops by planting this bush that grows edible fruit.
What's that bush called? Yeah, that sounds cool.
Sea berry.
What's that bush called again?
Sea berry.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I really like that permaculture stuff, planting things together that do different things, like how that, you know, serves the land you're planting it on. That's really cool.
Now, I mean, I think most people can identify, like, wild onions. And there's actually a wide variety of wild onions that grow. You have wild onions, wild garlic, field garlic, wild leeks. You know, there's just three or four off the top of my head that grow wildly in my area.
Now, are those edible? I was thinking wild onions weren't edible, but that's what I was told.
They actually are edible. Yeah, they are.
Oh, okay. Cool. They're the ones that, I'm thinking about, at least they look like chives, don't they? Except, you know, they're growing in a field instead.
Yeah, you have that kind. You also have the kind that looks more like green onions.
Okay. And so those are actually edible, huh?
Yes. You know, I mean, I don't know if they're as tasty as cultivated onions, but they do have a strong taste and a very strong smell and, you know, their nutrients.
Cool. Yeah, I always would see those, and I'd be like, oh, I'd love to eat those, but I remember, I think I remember from when I was a little kid, my mom telling me that they weren't edible, you know, I couldn't eat those, so I don't know.
I think that's a really pervasive problem with our society is that we see these quote-unquote weeds, and we have this idea that they're not edible, but they are. They really, really are. We're spending all this money to eradicate food from our lawn.
Yep. I'm looking at some pictures of the flowers on one of the wild onions.
Beautiful flowers, by the way.
This is from a blog called Sensible Survival. And the disclaimer at the top, which I like, it says, don't believe anything I or anybody else tells you about wild edible plants. Don't eat edible wild plants based on what you see in a book or on the internet. Get a qualified instructor to show you the plants, and don't eat them until the instructor shows you how to prepare them. Besides being a legal warning, this does make sense. Like, you know, it's good to really be sure.
Absolutely, and I feel that we've tried to make that that note abundantly clear multiple times in this episode. Most of the things I read suggest, you know, they do suggest having, you know, someone, you know, verify it. For the most part, they recommend, you know, at least three sources. And a lot of things you can, and there's a lot of things you need to learn to be careful with. And most of the sources I read will warn you about things that look similar. And I think another important thing to note, when trying and experimenting with wild foods, You want to do it a little bit at a time. So what you first want to do is kind of, you know, pick something, and you'll hold it, rub it on your hand, and see how that goes. And then, you know, a few hours later or the next day, you put it in your mouth, and then you spit it out, and you see how that goes. And then the next day or a few hours later, you eat, like, a nibble, like maybe a bite off of a leaf or a full leaf, and then you see what that does. And if you don't have any issues, then you evolve into eating a little bit more and then a little bit more until you know that you're safe and comfortable with it.
Makes sense. Good idea. Well, I think that that's a good closing sentence or whatever, closing statement there. So do we know what we have coming up next week?
No, we do not. We have some ideas in the works, as we mentioned last episode, but I don't actually know what's next week. I believe the second episode we did, we want to try to redo that from what Jemalek was saying. You didn't feel he was very clear and concise, so you kind of want to retry that, and we still have a Satanism episode we need to do. So hopefully we'll get those next week.
All right.
Another episode I want to plan, and I didn't talk about this last week, is I want to talk about the causes and kind of go into the causes of the Civil War in our country, in America. It's just been in, you know, kind of information that's been talked about a lot with the Confederate flag thing or whatever, and this and that. A lot of people have been discussing, you know, the history of the Confederate flag and the Civil War. And I'd like to go in a little bit about the history of it and its causes and really explore that topic. So if we have any experts, please contact Dreadfish or Ada OJ and let us know if you happen to know a lot about that topic.
Oh, sounds good.
All right, so I guess it's time to say good night, good morning, good afternoon.
And good now.
And the words of Louis not go there, we'll do better next time.
Peace, love, and happiness.